replies, but that's it. My nose wrinkled. I looked at Gideon and found him typing something into his phone. Carrie took another drink, his throat working on a hard swallow. It's not a relationship, not even friendship at this point. For all I know, he could be seeing someone too, and I'm the odd man out.
Well, for what it's worth, celibacy looks good on you, he snorted.
Because I've put on a few pounds? Happens. You eat, because you crave the endorphins you're not getting with an orgasm. And you get less exercise because you're not practicing any mattress gymnastics.
Carrie, I laughed.
Look at you, baby girl. You're all tight and toned from Marathon Man Cross over there.
Gideon looked up from his phone.
Come again?
That's what I just said, dude, Carrie drawled, winking at me. In so many words.
After waiting in a line of limos discharging their passengers, we finally pulled up to the red carpet rolled out in front of a historic, brick-faced building, home to a private members-only club. Paparazzi were as thick as fall leaves on the ground, lining the velvet ropes that cordoned them off from the walkway. Leaning forward, I looked through the open glass entrance doors and saw more photographers held back on the right side of the entrance, while logoed backdrops lined the wall on the left for event and sponsor-branded photo ops. Angus opened the door and I could feel the momentary expectation as the paparazzi waited to see who would step out. The moment Gideon did, it was like the mother of all lightning storms, camera flashes exploding in rapid, endless succession.
Mr. Cross, Gideon, look this way.
He held his hand out to me, the rubies in his wedding band catching the light and glittering. Holding my skirt up with one hand, I made my way over to him and set my hand in his. The moment I stepped out, I was blinded, but I kept my eyes open despite the spots dancing across my vision. A practiced smile pasted on my lips. I straightened. Gideon's hand settled on the small of my back, and pandemonium ensued. It somehow managed to get worse when Carrie appeared. The shouts became deafening. I spotted Raoul by the entrance, his hard gaze sweeping the melee. He lifted his arm and spoke into his wrist mic, coordinating with someone under his command. When he looked at me, my smile turned genuine. He gave me a brisk nod. Inside, we were met by two event handlers, who kept the required photo op moving along quickly, then escorted us up an elevator to the ballroom floor. We stepped into a vast space filled with New York's elite, a glamorous assembly of powerful men and perfectly presented women displayed to flattering effect by dimmed chandelier lighting and a profusion of candlelight. The atmosphere was heavily fragranced by the massive floral arrangements centering each dining table and enlivened by a society orchestra playing upbeat instrumentals through the hum of conversation. Gideon steered me through the groups of people clustered around the dining tables, pausing often for those who stepped into our path with greetings and congratulations. My husband had slid effortlessly, seamlessly into his public persona. Splendidly handsome, completely at ease, quietly commanding, coolly aloof. I, however, was stiff and edgy. Though I hoped that practiced smile hid my nervousness, Gideon and I didn't have a good track record at events like these. We ended up fighting and leaving separately. Things were different now, but still. His hand slid up my bared back and cupped my nape, kneading the tense muscles gently. He continued to speak to the two gentlemen who'd intercepted us, discussing market fluctuations, but I was instinctively certain that he was focused on me. I stood to his right, and he shifted smoothly, sliding just a bit behind me so that the right side of his body touched my back from shoulder to knee. Carrie reached around my shoulder and passed me a chilled flute of champagne.
"I see Monica and Stanton," he told me. "I'll let them know we're here."
I followed his direction as he closed in on where my mom stood beside her husband, her smile bright and beautiful as they talked with another couple. Stanton was elegantly handsome in his tuxedo, while my mother gleamed like a pearl in an off-white silk column dress. "Ava!" I turned at the sound of Ireland's voice, my eyes widening as I found her rounding the nearest table. For a moment, my brain stopped processing anything but the sight of her. She was tall and willowy, her long black hair artfully arranged in a chic updo. The side slit in her sophisticated black velvet gown showed off mile-long legs, while the single-shoulder bodice cupped breasts that were the perfect size for her slender frame. Ireland Vidal was a stunningly beautiful girl, her thickly lashed eyes the same striking blue as her mother's and Gideon's, and she was only 17. Picturing her as the woman she would become was breathtaking. Carrie wasn't the only one who was going to set the world on fire. She walked right into me, hugging me tight. "We're sisters now!" I smiled and hugged her back, careful not to spill my champagne on her. I glanced at Chris, who stood behind her, and he gave me a grin in return. The look in his eyes when they returned to his daughter was both tender and proud. God help the guys who set their sights on Ireland. With Chris, Christopher, and Gideon watching out for her, they would have some formidable men to get through first. Ireland pulled back and checked me out. "Wow! That necklace is amazing! And your boobs! I want a pair of those." I laughed. "You're perfect just the way you are. You're the most beautiful woman here. No way. But thanks." Her face lit up as Gideon excused himself from the conversation and turned to face her. "Hey, bro!" She was in his arms in an instant, hugging him as tightly as she'd hugged me. Gideon stood statue still for a moment. Then he hugged her back, his face softening in a way that made my heart skip a beat. I'd spoken to Ireland briefly on the phone after Gideon's interview, apologizing for keeping the secret of our wedding and explaining why. I wanted us to be closer than we were, but I was holding off on making too many overtures. It would be so easy to become the bridge between her and Gideon, and I didn't want it that way. They needed to have their own connection, independent of anyone else. My sister-in-law would be attending Columbia University soon, like her brothers before her. She'd be close, and we'd see each other more often. Until then, I would continue to encourage Gideon to foster their budding relationship. "Chris," I went to him and gave him a hug, pleased with the enthusiasm with which he hugged me back. He'd cleaned up since coming over to dinner, his hair freshly trimmed, and his jaw clean-shaven. Christopher Vidal Sr. was a quietly handsome man with a gentle gaze. There was an innate kindness in him that radiated in his voice and the way he looked at people. I'd thought so the first time I met him, and he'd done nothing to alter that first impression. "Gideon, Ava." Magdalena Perez joined us, looking seductively beautiful in a sleek emerald green gown, her arm linked with her boyfriend's. It was good to see that Magdalena had moved on from her unrequited interest in Gideon, which had caused problems for Gideon and me when our relationship was just getting started. She'd been a bitter, nasty bitch then, spurred on by Gideon's brother's manipulations. Now that she was happy with her artist, she was serene and lovely and was slowly becoming a close acquaintance. Greeting them both warmly, I shook Gage Flynn's hand as Gideon kissed Magdalena's proffered cheek. I didn't know Gage all that well yet, but he was obviously head over heels for Magdalena, and I knew that Gideon would have checked him out, making sure the guy was good enough for the woman who'd been a longtime friend of Gideon's family. We were accepting their congratulations when my mother and Stanton joined us, followed by Martin and Lacey, whom we hadn't seen since the weekend in Westport. I watched with a smile as Carrie and Ireland both laughed about something shared between them. "What a beautiful girl," my mother said, sipping champagne and eyeing Gideon's sister. "Right? And Carrie looks good. I said the same thing. She looked at me with a smile. You should know that we've offered to let him keep the apartment if he likes, or help him find something smaller. Oh. My gaze went to him, catching him nodding at something Chris told him. What did he say? That you'd offered him a private apartment adjoining Gideon's penthouse? She angled toward me. You'll all decide what works best for you, but I wanted to give him the option to stay where he is. It's always good to have options. I sighed, then nodded. She reached for my hand. Now, you and Gideon are handling your public image in your own way, but you have to be aware of what those horrible gossip blogs are saying about you and Carrie being lovers. Suddenly, the frenzy on the red carpet made sense, the three of us arriving together. Gideon denied that he's ever cheated on you, she went on quietly. But he's now known to have, shall we say, adventurous sexual appetites. Can you imagine how rumors will fly if the three of you are living together? Oh, man. Yeah, I could. The world had seen in graphic detail that my husband was up for a threesome. Not with another man in the mix, but even so. Those days were behind him, but they didn't know that, and wouldn't want to believe it anyway. It was just too salacious. Before you say you don't care, honey, realize that many people do. And if someone Gideon wants to do business with thinks he's morally corrupt, it could cost him a fortune. Really? These days? Not likely, but I bit my tongue instead of making a crack about my mom's concern about the bottom line. It always came down to that, in one way or another. I hear you, I muttered. As the time approached for the start of dinner, everyone began searching for their assigned tables. Gideon and I were at the front, of course, since he was speaking. Ireland and Chris had place cards at our table, as did Carrie. My mom, Stanton, Martin, and Lacey were at the table to our right. Magdalena and Gage were further back. Gideon pulled my chair out for me, and I moved to sit, then stopped, startled by the couple I spotted a few tables away. Straightening, I looked at Gideon. The Lucases are here. His head went up, his gaze searching. I knew the moment he spotted them by the way his jaw hardened.
So they are. Sit down, Angel.
I sat, and he pushed my chair in, taking a seat beside me. He pulled out his phone and typed out a quick text. Leaning toward him, I whispered, I've never seen them together before. His phone buzzed with a reply as he looked up at me.
They don't go out as a couple often.
Are you texting Arash?
Angus.
Huh? About the Lucases?
Buck 'em.
He slid his phone back into his jacket and leaned toward me, draping one arm along the back of my chair and the other on the table. Caging me in. He put his lips next to my ear.
Next time we come to one of these, I'm putting you in a short skirt and you're going to be naked underneath.
I was grateful everyone else was looking elsewhere and couldn't possibly hear, and that the orchestra was playing a little louder to keep all the guests moving toward their seats. You're a fiend. His voice dropped into a seductive purr.
I'm going to slide my hand between your thighs and slip my fingers into your soft, sweet cunt.
Gideon! Scandalized, I glanced at him and found him watching me with a feral grin and lustful eyes.
All through dinner, Angel,
he murmured, nuzzling against my temple.
I'm going to be finger-fucking you slow and easy, working that tight, perfect pussy of yours until you come for me again and again.
Oh, my God. His low, rough voice was pure sin and sex. I shivered just from that, but his dirty talk had me sagging into my chair. What's gotten into you? He pressed a quick, hard kiss against my cheek and straightened.
You were all knotted up. Now you're not.
If we'd been totally alone, I would have smacked him. I told him so.
You love me.
he shot back, turning to glance around the ballroom as servers began to bring out the salads. Do I? He focused on me again.
Yes, madly.
No point in arguing. He was right. We were just being served dessert, a dome of chocolate cake that looked delicious, when a woman in a conservative navy gown came over to our table and crouched between Gideon and me. "We're going to begin the program in about 15 minutes, she said. "Glenn's going to speak for a few minutes, then we'll have you come up." He nodded.
"No problem. I'm ready whenever you are."
She smiled, and I could tell she was a little flustered being that close to him. She had to be at least his mother's age, but then women of all ages appreciated a gorgeous man.
"Ava," Ireland leaned toward me, "you want to take a break before he goes up?"
I understood what she meant.
"Of course."
Gideon and Chris pushed back from the table and pulled out our chairs. Since I'd lost all my lip gloss while eating and drinking, I pressed a kiss to my husband's jaw.
"I can't wait to hear you talk,"
I told him, my smile wide with anticipation. He shook his head.
"The things that turn you on."
"You love me."
"I do. Madly."
Following Ireland, I weaved through the tables, passing directly by the Lucases. They watched us, looking cozy, with Dr. Terence Lucas's arm slung around his wife's shoulders. Anne caught my gaze and flashed a sharp smile that made my skin crawl. I reached up and smoothed my middle finger over my brow in a subtle but obvious, "fuck you." Ireland and I had moved a few tables farther when she abruptly stopped in front of me. I bumped into her back.
"Sorry."
When she didn't continue forward, I angled around her to see what was blocking our way.
"What's going on?"
She turned to look at me. Her eyes were bright with tears.
"It's Rick," she said, her voice wavering.
"Who?" My brain scrambled to catch up. She looked so hurt and lost. The connection suddenly clicked.
"Your boyfriend?"
She turned her head forward again, and I tried to track her attention, searching the packed tables for
someone. "Where? What does he look like?"
"Right there." She gave a hard jerk of her chin, and I spotted tears running down her face. "With the blonde in the red dress."
"Where?"
I found a few possibilities, then zeroed in on the youngest couple. One look at him and I knew the type. I used to fall for them, too. Confident, sexually experienced, all the right lines. I felt a bit sick, thinking about how many guys like that I'd once let use me. Then I got pissed. Rick was giving the girl plastered to his side a cocky, sexy smile. They certainly weren't just friends. Not when they were both eye-fucking each other. I caught Ireland by the elbow and guided her forward. "Keep walking." We got to the ladies' room. The sudden quiet when we stepped inside made it possible to hear her sobbing. I pulled her aside in the vanity area, thankful we were the only ones there, and handed her some tissues I pulled out of the box on the counter.
"He told me he had to work tonight," she said. "That's why I said yes when Dad asked me if I wanted to come."
"This is the guy who won't tell his parents about you because of Gideon's father?" She nodded.
"They're out there, sitting with him."
It was coming back to me, that conversation we'd had during the launch of the 6/9 music video. Rick's grandparents had lost a chunk of their wealth to Jeffrey Cross's Ponzi scheme. They thought it was convenient that Gideon was one of the wealthiest men in the world now, even though it was evident to anyone who looked that he built his empire with his own hard work and capital. But then Rick was probably just making excuses to juggle multiple dates. After all, his parents were here and Gideon was the star attraction. Made me question whether the animosity he told her about was bullshit.
"He told me he'd broken up with her months ago,"
she cried. "The blonde?" Sniffling, she nodded again.
"I just saw him last night. He didn't say anything about getting the night off and coming here.
Did you mention that you would be here?
No. I don't talk about Gideon. Not with him anyway.
Was Rick just a young, dumb kid getting his rocks off with every pretty girl who'd let him? Or was he screwing with Gideon's sister as some sort of twisted payback? In any case, the guy was a douche.
Don't cry over that loser, Ireland.
I got her more tissue. Don't give him the satisfaction.
I just want to go home.
I shook my head. That's not going to help. Honestly, nothing's going to help. It's going to hurt for a while. But you can get back at him if you want to. That might feel good.
She looked at me, tears still streaming. What do you mean?
You've got one of the hottest male models in New York sitting by you. Just say the word and Carrie will become your very attentive, very crazy about you date. The more I thought of it, the more I liked it. Together you can run into Rick and, oops, well, hello, fancy seeing you here. But what can he say? He's got the blonde and you get to walk away with an even score.
Ireland started shaking. Maybe I should just talk to him.
Magdalena stepped into the ladies' room and paused, assessing the situation.
Ireland, what's wrong?
I kept my mouth shut, since it wasn't my story to share. Ireland shook her head.
It's nothing. I'm okay.
All right. Magdalena looked at me.
I won't pry, but you should know that I'd never share anything with your brothers if you told me not to.
It took her a moment, and then Ireland spoke through her tears.
This guy I've been seeing for a couple months now, he's out there with someone else. His old girlfriend.
Personally, I suspected Rick had never broken up with that girlfriend to begin with, and had been stringing Ireland along on the side, but then I was cynical about things like that.
Oh. Magdalena's face softened in sympathy. Men can be such assholes.
Look, if you want to slip out without him noticing, I'll order a car for you.
She snapped open her clutch and took out her smartphone.
On me. How's that?
Hang on, I interjected. I laid out my plan. Magdalena's brows rose. Devious.
Why get mad when you can get even?
I don't know. Ireland glanced at the mirror and cursed. She grabbed more tissues and worked on fixing her eye makeup.
I look like shit.
You look a million times better than that tramp out there, I told her. She gave a watery laugh.
I hate her, too. She's such a bitch.
But she's admired some of Carrie's Grey Isles ads,
Magdalena said.
I know I have. That did the trick.
While Ireland wasn't ready yet to completely write off Rick, she was certainly open to making his date envious. The rest would come in time. Hopefully. Then again, there were some lessons we women had to learn the hard way. We made it back to our table, just as a gentleman I assumed was Glenn headed up the stairs onto the stage and crossed over to the lectern. I knelt by Carrie, setting my hand on his arm. He glanced down at me.
What's up?
I explained what I wanted him to do and why. His grin flashed white in the dimmed lighting.
Sure thing, baby girl.
You're the best, Carrie.
So they all say.
Rolling my eyes, I stood and headed back to my chair, which Gideon pulled out for me. My cake was still there, and I eyed it eagerly.
They tried to take that,
Gideon murmured.
I defended it for you.
Aw, thank you, baby. You're so good to me. He put his hand on my thigh beneath the table and gave it a soft squeeze. I watched my husband while I ate, admiring Gideon's air of calm relaxation as we both listened to Glenn talk about the importance of the work his organization did in the city. Whenever I thought about giving speeches on behalf of Crossroads, I got butterflies in my stomach. But I'd eventually get the hang of it, figure things out. I would learn what I needed to know to be an asset to both my husband and Cross Industries. We had time, and I had Gideon's love. The rest would fall into place.
It is our pleasure to honor a man who truly needs no introduction.
Putting my fork down, I sat back and listened as Glenn extolled my husband's many accomplishments and his generous commitment to causes that benefited victims of sexual abuse. It didn't escape my notice that Chris was watching Gideon with a new understanding in his gaze and pride. The look he gave my husband was no different from the one I'd seen him give Ireland. The room exploded into applause as Gideon rose lithely to his feet. I stood, too, along with Chris, Carrie, and Ireland. The rest of the room followed suit until a full standing ovation welcomed Gideon to the stage. He glanced at me before he walked away, his fingers brushing the ends of my hair. Seeing him traverse the stage was its own pleasure. His stride was smooth and unhurried, but it commanded attention. Gracefully powerful, he moved so beautifully it was a joy to watch him. He set the plaque they'd given him atop the lectern, his tanned hands in notable contrast to the white of his cuffs. Then he began speaking, his dynamic baritone smooth and cultured, making each word a separate caress. There was no other sound in the room, everyone riveted by his dark good looks and consummate oration. It was over too quickly. I was on my feet again the moment he picked up the plaque, my hands clapping so hard my palms hurt. They directed him to the side of the stage where a photographer waited with Glenn. Gideon spoke to them, then looked at me, beckoning me to him with an outstretched hand. He met me at the bottom of the stairs, offering his arm to help me navigate the ascent in my dress and heels. "I am so hot for you right now," I told him softly. He laughed.
"Fiend."
We danced for an hour after the dinner was over. Why didn't I dance with my husband more often? He was as skilled and sexual on the dance floor as he was in bed, his body moving with fluid strength, his lead confident and expertly assertive. Gideon was intimately familiar with how we flowed together and used that to his advantage, taking every opportunity to slide his body against mine. I was wildly aroused. And he was aware, his gaze on my face both hot and knowing. When I could tear my attention away from him, I spotted Carrie dancing with Ireland. He had scoffed when I first asked him to take dancing lessons with me, but he'd come around and quickly become our instructor's favorite. He was a natural, and he easily led Ireland despite her inexperience. A flamboyant dancer, Carrie claimed a wide space on the floor, which made him and Ireland the focus of much attention. He, however, only had eyes for his partner, playing the part of a completely spellbound date to perfection. Even heartbroken, Ireland couldn't help but be charmed by his unwavering, focused attention. I saw her laugh often, her cheeks prettily flushed with exertion. I'd missed that oops moment with Rick I'd hoped to witness, but I saw the result. He was dancing with his girlfriend, woefully unable to compete with Carrie in either skill or looks. There was no more smiling or eye-fucking, since both he and the blonde kept glancing at Carrie and Ireland, who were clearly having far more fun. Terrence and Ann Lucas danced, too, but were wise enough to stay on the other side of the dance floor.
"Let's go home,"
Gideon murmured, as the song ended and we slowed to a halt.
"And put some sweat on those diamonds."
I smiled. "Yes, please." We went back to our table to retrieve his plaque and my clutch.
"We'll head out with you,"
Stanton said, joining us with my mother beside him. "What about Carrie?" I asked. "Martin will take him home," my mother answered. "They're all still enjoying themselves." It took us just as long to leave as it had taken us to arrive, with so many people catching Gideon and Stanton for the first time all evening. I could only say thank you to congratulations, but my mother occasionally spoke with authority, adding brief but incisive comments to things Stanton discussed. I envied her that knowledge and was inspired by it. We'd have to talk about that when the time presented itself. The plus side of being delayed for so long was that it gave time for the cars to be brought around. When we finally made it down to street level, Raoul informed us that the limo was only a block away. Clancy shot me a quick smile before he told my mom and Stanton their car was pulling up now. Paparazzi waited outside. Not as many as before, but more than a dozen. "Let's get together tomorrow," my mom said, giving me a hug in the lobby. "Sounds good." I pulled back. I could use a day at the spa. "What a lovely idea." Her smile was brilliant. "I'll make the arrangements." I hugged Stanton goodbye. Gideon shook his hand. We stepped outside and the camera flashes burst around us. The city welcomed us outdoors with the sounds of late evening traffic and the gentle warmth of the evening. The humidity was slowly receding as summer gave way to fall, and I looked forward to spending more time outdoors. Autumn in New York was a unique enchantment, something I'd only enjoyed previously during short visits.
"Get down!"
The shout barely registered before Gideon tackled me. A loud crack of sound jolted through me, reverberating off the brick and ringing in my ears, deafeningly close. Jesus, right beside us. We hit the carpeted pavement hard. Gideon rolled, covering me with his body. More weight as someone threw themselves over Gideon. Another bark of noise. Then another. Another. Crushed. Too heavy. Breathe. My lungs couldn't expand. My head pounded. Oxygen. God. I struggled, clawing at the red carpet. Gideon clutched me tighter. His voice was harsh in my ears, the words lost beneath the frantic buzzing in my head. Air. Can't breathe. The world went black.
14. Christ! Ava! I ran frantic hands over her limp form, searching for injury as the driver hit the gas pedal hard and the limo lurched forward, slamming me back into the seat. My wife lay deathly still across my lap, unresponsive to my desperate examination. No blood on her gown or skin. A pulse, hard and quick. Her chest lifting and falling with each breath. Relief hit me so hard I felt dizzy. I pulled her up tight against me, cradling her close. "Thank God!" Raoul barked orders into the mic at his wrist. The moment he shut up, I demanded, "What the fuck happened?" He dropped his arm. One of the photographers had a gun and opened fire. Clancy got him. "Was anyone hurt?" "Monica Stanton went down." "What?" My slowing heartbeat lurched back into a pounding rhythm. I looked down at my wife as she slowly came to, her eyelids fluttering. "Jesus. How bad?" He exhaled harshly. "I'm waiting for word. It didn't look good. You grabbed Mrs. Cross, and Mrs. Stanton moved into the way." "Ava." I held my wife tighter, running my hand over her hair as we sped through the city.
"What happened?"
Ava's soft question as we turned the corner that led to the garage knotted my stomach. Raoul looked at me, his face grim. Only moments before he'd taken a call and met my gaze, confirming my worst fear with a shake of his head and a quietly voiced, "I'm sorry." My wife's mother was dead. How was I supposed to tell Ava? And after I did, how could I keep her safe until we knew what the hell was going on? In my jacket pocket, my phone buzzed constantly. Calls, messages. I needed to get to them all, but my wife came first. We pulled into the garage, driving past the guard in the glass cubicle. My foot tapped restlessly on the floorboard. I wanted out of the car. I needed my wife locked down.
Gideon?
She clutched at my jacket.
What happened? I heard gunshots.
False alarm, I said gruffly, my grip on her too tight. A car backfired.
What? Really?
She blinked up at me, wincing as I pulled her even closer.
Ow!
I'm sorry. I'd taken her down hard, unable to break the fall for her without exposing her to danger. It had been instinctual, an abrupt response to the urgency in Raoul's voice. I overreacted.
For real?
She tried to sit up.
I thought I heard multiple shots.
The death of a few cameras, maybe. A few people got startled, dropped their gear. The car slowed to a halt, and Raoul leapt out, extending his hand to Ava to help her. She climbed out slowly, and I was directly behind her, scooping her up into my arms the moment I straightened. I strode to the garage elevator, waited while Raoul typed in the code. One of his team stood behind us, facing the other direction, his hand in his jacket on his gun as he surveilled. Would he be enough if there was another shooter lying in wait?
Hey, I can walk,
Ava said, still punchy, her arms around my shoulders.
And you need to answer your phone. That thing's going crazy.
Give me a minute. I stepped into the elevator. You passed out, scared the shit out of me.
I couldn't breathe.
Kissing her forehead, I apologized again. I wouldn't feel safe until we stepped into our living room. I glanced at Raoul. I'll be out shortly. I took my wife directly to the bedroom, laying her down atop the comforter. Lucky barked in his crate, pawing at the door.
That was so weird.
Ava shook her head.
Where's my clutch? I want to call Mom. Did Clancy freak out too?
My gut knotted. I'd promised to never lie to my wife, and I knew this lie was going to hurt her badly. Hurt us. But,
God, how the fuck did I tell her? And if I did, how could I keep her home when she'd want to go out and see the truth for herself?
Lucky's plaintive whines only ratcheted up my anxiety. I think we left your purse in the car. I brushed the hair back from her forehead, fighting the tremor that wanted to rack my entire body. I'll have someone get it and bring it up.
Okay. Can I use your phone for now?
Let's get you settled first. Are you hurting? Bruised? I shot a glare at Lucky, but that only made him paw the metal bars more furiously. She poked at her hip and winced.
Maybe.
All right. We'll take care of that. I went to the bathroom, pulling out my phone to turn it off. The screen was an endless scroll of missed calls and texts. I watched it go black, shoved it into my pants pocket, and then turned on the taps in the bathtub. Anyone I'd want to hear from could reach Raoul or Angus. I tossed a handful of Epsom salts into the steaming water. I knew a bath was a risk, considering how rare it was for me to not join Ava when she took one. Still, hot soaks relaxed her, made her calm. I suspected she took naps during the day to make up for the hours our sex life took out of the nights, but she was running a sleep deficit after the weekend. If I could just get her to wind down and get in bed, she might drift off. It would buy me some time to figure out what happened, what risk remained, talk to Dr. Peterson.
Fuck.
And Victor. I had to call Ava's dad. Get him on a flight to New York as soon as possible. Carrie. He should be here too. Once I had more facts and a support system for my wife, then I could tell her. Just a few hours. That was all I needed. I struggled to ignore the sick fear that Ava wouldn't forgive me for the delay. She was letting Lucky out when I stepped back into the bedroom. A laugh escaped her at the puppy's enthusiasm. The joyous sound, one I loved so much, pierced me like a knife in the chest. Kissing Lucky's head, she looked at me with bright eyes.
You should put him on his puppy pad. He's been locked up a while.
I'll take him. She rubbed Lucky's head before passing him over.
I hear a bath running.
A soak might do you good.
Limber me up,
she teased. The look in her eyes, it killed me. I almost told her, but I couldn't get the words past the lump in my throat. Instead, I turned away and headed down the hallway to the half-bath off the living room, where Lucky's patch of fake grass was. I set him down on it, ran my hands through my hair. Think, damn it. God, I needed a drink. Yes, a drink. Hard liquor. I went to the kitchen, tried to think of something strong that Ava would actually drink. A digestif, maybe? The house phone. Shit. I went to turn off the ringer and saw that someone had already thought of it. Turning back around, I spotted the coffee maker. Something hot. Relaxing. No caffeine. Tea. I went to the pantry and searched, shoving around the items on the shelves, looking for a box of tea Angus kept at the penthouse. Some herbal crap, he said, smoothed the rough edges. I found it and focused, filling a mug from the instant hot water tap. I dropped two tea bags into it, a liberal pour of rum, then a scoop of honey. I stirred, spilled onto the counter. More rum. Tossing the tea bags into the sink, I headed back to my wife. For an instant, when I didn't find her in the bedroom, I panicked. Then I heard her in the closet, and my breath left me in a rush. I set the mug down by the bath, turned the water off, and went to her. I found her sitting on the bench, taking off her shoes.
"The dress is ruined, I think,"
she said, as she stood in her bare feet, showing me the tear along the left side. "I'll buy you another." She flashed me a big smile.
"You're spoiling me."
It was fucking torture. Every second, every lie I told, every truth I left unsaid. I was flayed by the love in her eyes, the utter trust. Sweat slid down my back. I yanked my jacket off and tossed it aside, clawing at my bow tie and collar until they both came apart and let me breathe.
"Help me out of this."
She turned her back to me. I unfastened the gown and pushed it off her shoulders, letting it fall to a puddle on the floor. Then I unhooked her bra, hearing her sigh with pleasure as its constriction eased. Looking her over, I cursed silently at the bruise already shadowing her hip and the abrasions on her arm from the carpet. She yawned.
"Wow, I'm tired."
"Thank God." "You should sleep then." She shot me a heated look over her shoulder.
"I'm not that tired."
Jesus. Being gutted couldn't hurt worse. I couldn't touch her, make love to her. Not with my deceit between us. I swallowed hard. "All right then. I've got to see to some business first. I'll get your purse. I made a hot toddy for you. It's by the bathtub. Just relax, and I'll join you as soon as I can."
"Is everything all right?"
Unable to lie any more than I already had, I told her an irrelevant truth. "I've missed a lot of work this week. Some pressing things need to be dealt with."
"Sorry. I know that's my fault."
She kissed my jaw.
"Love you, Ace."
Grabbing a robe off the hooks, She slid into it and walked out. I stood there, surrounded by the smell of her, my hands still tingling from the feel of her, my heart pounding with fear and self-loathing. Lucky raced in so fast he ricocheted off the door before barreling into my feet. I picked him up, rubbing the top of his head. This was one nightmare he couldn't wake me from. Raoul waited in my home office, talking briskly on his phone. I joined him, closing the door behind me. He ended the call and stood. The police are on the scene. The gunman's in custody. Monica? They're waiting for the medical examiner. I couldn't imagine it. I went to my desk, sat heavily in the chair. My gaze went to the photos of Ava on the wall. The detectives have been told that you and Mrs. Cross will be here at home when it's time to get your statements. I nodded and prayed for them to wait until morning to make that house call. I took the phone off the hook in the kitchen when we arrived, he said quietly. I noticed. Thank you. There was a knock at the door. Tensing, I expected Ava to walk in. I exhaled in relief when it was Angus instead. I'm going to head back, Raoul said. I'll keep you posted. I need Ava's purse from the car. And Carrie, get him here. He nodded and left. Angus settled into the seat Raoul had just vacated. I'm sorry, lad. So am I. I should have been there. And have someone else I love in the line of fire? I pushed to my feet, too restless to sit. It's a blessing you were at the Lucas's. He stared at me a moment, and his gaze dropped to his hands. It took me a second to realize what I'd said. Another to know that I hadn't told him I loved him before now. I hoped he'd known anyway. Taking a deep breath, his chin lifted and he looked at me again. How's Ava? I have to check on her. She's taking a bath. Poor lass. She doesn't know. I rubbed the back of my neck. I haven't told her. Gideon. His eyes were wide with the same dismay I felt. You, Kenny. What good would it do? I snapped. We don't have answers. Her mother's gone. I can't have her going back to the scene and seeing that. Why torture her or put her at risk? Christ, it could have been her. It could still be her if we don't keep her safe. He watched me pace, with eyes that had seen, and still saw, too much. I'm going to make some calls. I pulled out my phone. I need to get a handle on the situation before I tell her. Try to cushion the blow as much as I can. She's been through so much. My voice broke. My eyes burned. What can I do to help? He asked softly. I pulled myself together. I need a jet available for Ava's father. I'm going to call him now. I'll see to it. He stood. Give me a few minutes to break the news to him, then text him the info when you have it. Consider it done. Thank you. Gideon, you should know my search of the Lucas residence was successful. Reaching into his pocket, he pulled out a flash drive no bigger than a dime. She kept this in a bedroom safe, buried beneath her jewelry in a box. She scanned all his notes. I looked at him blankly. Anne and Hugh were the least of my concerns at the moment. It's all lies, he continued. He mentioned nothing of what really went on. What you may find of interest, when the time comes, is what he had to say about Christopher. Setting the drive on my desktop, Angus left the room. I stared at it. Then I went to my desk, opened a drawer, and swept the drive into it with the brush of my hand. Turning my phone back on, I saw that there were texts and voicemails from Carrie, Magdalena, Clancy, Ireland, Chris. Overwhelmed, I went to the home screen. I pulled up Dr. Peterson's office and my contacts and dialed. Going through the automated menu, I selected the after-hours emergency switchboard and told the answering operator that it was very much an emergency. A death was involved, and the doctor needed to call me back as soon as he could. The entire interaction was cold and clinical, especially for something so desperately personal. The grim process seemed like a terrible insult to the vibrantly beautiful wife and mother who was no longer with us. And yet I found myself wishing the next call I had to make could be accomplished with so little emotion. As the line rang on the other end, I sank into my chair. The last time I'd talked to Victor had been the call I had placed from Rio de Janeiro, when I explained that the photo of me with two women was taken before I ever met his daughter. He had received that information with chilly reserve, letting me know without saying it that I wasn't good enough for Ava. I couldn't disagree. Now, I had to tell him that the other woman he cared for had been taken from him again. This time forever. Ava believed her father was still in love with her mother. If so, the news would level him. I could still taste the bile at the back of my throat and feel the icy panic that had blanked my mind in those first few moments after the shooting. There would be nothing for me without Ava.
Reyes, Victor answered, sounding cool and alert. There was noise in the background. Traffic, maybe. Distant music. I glanced at my watch, realized he might be on duty.
It's Cross. I need to tell you something. Are you alone?
I can be. What's wrong?
He demanded, picking up on the gravity of my tone.
Has something happened to Ava?
No, it's not Ava. Just get it out. Blunt and quick. That's how I'd want to be told that my life was over.
I'm sorry. Monica was killed tonight.
There was a terrible pause.
What did you just say?
My head fell back against the chair. He'd heard me the first time. I could tell by his voice. But he couldn't believe it. I'm very sorry, Victor. We don't know much more than that at this time. From his side of the call, I heard a car door open, then slam shut. There was a brief spate of transmissions from a police scanner. Then eerie quiet followed and stretched out for long minutes. Still, I knew he was there. It happened barely an hour ago, I explained quietly, trying to bridge that silence. We were all leaving an event. A gunman in the crowd opened fire.
Why?
I don't know. But the shooter was apprehended. We should have more details soon. His voice strengthened.
Where's my daughter?
She's home with me. She won't leave here until I'm certain it's safe for her to do so. I'm making flight arrangements for you now. Ava will need you, Victor.
Let me talk to her.
She's resting. You'll get a text with the information for the flight as soon as it's confirmed. It'll be one of my jets. You can speak with her in the morning when you get here. Victor exhaled roughly.
All right. I'll be ready.
I'll see you shortly. Hanging up, I thought of the other man who was a father figure for Ava. I couldn't think about what Stanton was going through. It shattered my mind. But I felt for him, and was deeply sorry that anything I could offer would be inadequate. Still, I reached out, typing a quick text. If I can be of service in any way, please let me know. I left my office and went to the master bathroom. I paused on the threshold, everything inside me raw and aching, at the sight of Ava stretched out in the steaming water with her eyes closed. Her hair was clipped up in a sexy, wild mess. The diamonds glittered on the counter. Lucky pawed at my shins.
"Hi,"
she murmured, her eyes still closed.
"You take care of everything?"
"Not yet. Right now, I need to take care of you." I went to her, saw the toddy was half gone. "You should finish your drink." Her eyes opened slowly, dreamy and soft.
"It's strong. I've got a buzz."
"Good. Now drink the rest." She complied. Not out of obedience, but in the way a woman with a hidden agenda pretended to follow an order. Because it suited her.
"Are you coming in?"
she asked, licking her lips. I shook my head. She pouted.
"I'm done then."
She rose from the tub, rivulets of water sliding over her flushed curves. She gave me a seductive smile, knowing what she was doing to me.
"Sure you won't change your mind?"
My throat worked on a hard swallow. "I can't." With weighted steps, I grabbed a towel and handed it to her. I turned away, tormented by the sight of her, and collected first aid items, setting the tubes and packets on the counter. She came to me, leaning into my side.
"Are you okay? Still thinking about your mom?"
"What? No." I groaned, my head bowed. "When you passed out..." "Fuck. I've never been so scared."
"Gideon."
She slid into me, hugging me.
"I'm okay."
Sighing, I gave her a quick squeeze and let her go. It pained me too much to hold her, knowing what had been left unspoken. "Let me take a look and make sure." Lucky sat with his head to the side, watching me curiously as I inspected Ava's arm. I cleaned it with an antibiotic wipe before smoothing ointment over the angry red scrape. I taped gauze over it to keep it protected. The livid bruise on her hip got a generous application of arnica, my fingers lightly swirling over the darkened skin until the gel was fully absorbed. My touch and focus aroused her, despite my best efforts. Squeezing my eyes shut, I straightened. "Off to bed with you, Mrs. Cross."
Yes. Let's go to bed."
Her hands went to my shoulders, her fingers running down the untied ends of my bow tie.
"I like your collar open like this. Very sexy."
"Angel, you're shredding me." I caught her hands. "I've still got some things to handle."
"Okay, I'll behave. For now."
With her hand in mine, I led her into the bedroom. She protested when I pulled out a Cross Industries t-shirt and slipped it over her head.
"What about the diamonds?" she asked.
She might never wear them again after this night.
Where the fuck was Dr. Peterson?
I needed his help to say the right things in the right way when the time came. My fingers brushed over her cheek, the only touch I would allow myself. This will be more comfortable for now. I tucked her into bed, smoothing her hair back from her cheeks.